For someone from the Midlands of England who now resides in New Zealand, to say they have been around the world is not in and of itself a story. But for the subject of our second profile in urgent care, going around the world not only changed her perspective on life and medical careers, but it helped change the sporting world's view of female endurance athletes, destroyed gender stereotypes, and gave sailing's patriarchy a large serving of humble pie. Dr. Claire Russell is an urgent care physician in Hamilton, New Zealand. I sat down with her to discuss her career in medicine and to look at the journey she's been on from England's second city to the heart of Middle Earth. How has that journey informed and influenced her life, both in and out of medicine? And what makes urgent care such a compelling fellowship for all doctors to consider? Now, all journeys have a beginning. So I asked Claire how she started her medical career.
I was basically in a bright, young, you know, teenage girl in the 70s, and I got into medicine because that was a field that I was really, really interested in. I lived in a big city. I lived in Birmingham in England. I'd done nursing part-time, as well as doing my schooling, just to help with finances, and that was a couple of shifts a week. And I think I've always wanted to be a doctor. It was something that I wanted to do from a very, very early age. In those days, you did the interviews. This was in the late 70s, got into the Royal Free Medical School in London, which was a relatively gender-neutral medical school in those days. It lauded itself on being one of the first female medical schools or that had a good female entry. And so it was a natural one for me to try. And they offered me less. They offered me a better entry criteria than the others. I mean, I got accepted from several others, but it was all straight A's in those days in the UK. And I went to medical school at the Royal Free. I absolutely loved it. So I had a very sort of linear education to that point, grammar school, medical school, and then at the end of medical school, still relatively young, I think I was about 23, 24, in those went into house officer positions that you did in England in the middle 80s, and paediatrics. And then I suppose I looked forward and thought, is this it? Is this my going to be it forever and this sort of predetermined path? And I looked at doing some of the some overseas work, so went to Australia and worked in a clinic there that was quite different. We basically had quite a lot of autonomy, and then those sorts of travelling experiences made me think differently. I came back to England, did several other jobs. And at the time I was starting to get quite interested in sailing and travel and that sort of aspect of life. And I was considering going over to China. Tiananmen Square happened, which slowed that down a little bit. And then I was working in the southwest of England, and I saw in the newspaper that a all-female sailing team needed a doctor.
So as Claire says, a fairly linear path through school and medical school that I'm sure most of us can identify with. And maybe some of us have had a similar moment in our careers when an opportunity arose when our lives could take a different turn. Much like the poem The Road Not Taken by Robert Frost. Two roads diverged in a yellow wood, and sorry I could not travel both and be one traveller, Long I stood and looked down one as far as I could, to where it bent in the undergrowth. It would seem Claire had reached that fork in the road.
It was a Sunday morning, I was on call. They needed a doctor who could sail, who was relatively young, fit, who didn't have many ties because there was some danger involved, I suppose. That was how it was paced, put out there, and I thought I could do that. So I phoned up the Sunday Times newspaper who had put the article in, spoke to the journalist who had written the article, and I said, could you pass my number on to the skipper, who was Tracy Edwards? And then I went to the Isle of down to Southampton, sailed around the Isle of Wight with the team on their boat, and got the job. So I left formal medicine then for quite a period of time. The team itself then went on to do the Whitbread Round the World Yacht Race as the first all-female team to do that.
Now, we won't be ignoring that bit, that little line about sailing around the world. We'll come back to look at this in more depth later. But first, let's hear the rest of Claire's medical journey.
And then when I came back from that, there'd been a sort of a change very much in my thinking and what I wanted to do with my life. I'd also met a partner. I'd also met a whole load of different people that were doing very, very different things. And for many years, interspersed my medicine with sailing and a sailing business. And made them both work, which worked very, very successfully. I went into emergency medicine at that stage. So I was in the ED in the Isle of Wight and then subsequently went over to be working in the emergency department in Southampton. I didn't do the fellowship training that was available in the 90s at the time because it just didn't work with the other things I was doing. I couldn't be that person that was there all the time. But I did do the diploma in immediate care, which was run through, and I think it still is run through, the Royal College of Surgeons of Edinburgh. And this was like as a basics doctor. It would be quite similar to the prime that we do in New Zealand. And that also fitted in with the fact that I was a team doctor for some of the sailing teams. A lot of I would do events medicine. I would be the one person on the, you know, race boating and also power boating. I would go and I would be their team doctor for that. And that was most of my 90s. And I then worked up through the emergency department to be a senior, you know, a staff grade in emergency medicine in Southampton. So that was a busy urban unit. And then we, as a family, I'd got two small children at that stage. As a family, we moved to New Zealand. My husband was a Kiwi. He was a Kiwi yachtsman. So we moved to New Zealand and I was, by serendipity of meeting people, a rural general practice up in the far north offered me a general practice job. They were looking for a female to join them. They also needed somebody who had ED experience because rural medicine is quite different. You do have to deal with, you know, injuries and I suppose what would be now urgent care. And I started working up there and absolutely loved it. I was very nervous about going into general practice. I'd not done that continuity of care. I wasn't as au fait with family medicine as I felt I needed to be, but I was a mother who was comfortable with, you know, urgent care presentations, and the rest I was quite capable of learning. I was there for 14 years and did my general practice fellowship whilst I was there. And then again, we moved. So we moved down to the Waikato to a slightly different medical paradigm, really, And I found that the general practice I was in, although it was, I mean, it was a fantastic general practice, but I was missing the urgent care aspect of it. You didn't see as many acute presentations, and my on-call commitment was at the Anglesey Urgent Care Clinic, the after-hours, and I just loved it. And it was basically something I thought, I would like to do this full-time. It bridged the two disciplines I'd been in, which was emergency medicine, which had changed a lot since I did it, general practice. And I felt comfortable there, and I enjoyed it. I enjoyed what I was doing. And so I decided to do my urgent care fellowship and work full-time in urgent care. And that's where I am now.
When you look at Claire's path through medicine, you can see the blending of her emergency medicine and general practice experience culminating in an urgent care career. But it is clear that her career turned on her decision to step into the unknown and take the road not taken. To quote Robert Frost again, two roads diverged in a wood, and I took the one less travelled by, and that has made all the difference. Let's look at that journey in a bit more depth.
Okay, so the background of this boat, the boat was called Maiden. In the end, I mean, it was called Maiden in Great Britain when I started, but the boat was called Maiden. There was a skipper, Tracy Edwards. She was a very forceful and driven young lady that wanted to sail on this race. She'd been on the Whitbread Round the World race, which was sort of the ultimate offshore adventure race of its time as the cook. And girls were allowed to sort of be the cook. And there were some girls that went with male teams, but very, very, very few. Her dream was to put a team of girls in to this race. This was the 1980, this was going to be for the 1989 Whitbread race. And there's usually several years work up before then, getting the boat, getting the sponsors. So her dream was to going to get a team of girls, and she just hit brick wall after brick wall. And basically carried on. And she said, I'm going to put a team of girls in this race. You did need sponsorship. It needed money. You needed a boat. You needed a lot of things. And you needed a crew. In those days, they recommended a medic. Many of the boats took doctors. They don't now. The race is now called the Volvo. It's changed its main sponsor. So although they have a designated medic on board, it's very hard to get duly qualified people with the sailing standard the way that it's required on modern boats. So I joined a team. I mean, most of the girls had been there for quite a long time. At the time I joined, we still didn't have the sponsorship. Everybody said we were not strong enough, we weren't fit enough, that we weren't good enough, that endurance wasn't for females, that... I think there was a genuine fear that we would all sort of die and that wouldn't look very good. And then the ultimate was that it had never been done before. And I suppose Tracy Edwards said, well, we are strong enough. We can adapt the boat. We are fit enough. And endurance is actually something that women do all the time. And just because it's never been done before, well, that's not going to stop us. So she got sponsorship. In the end, from Jordan, Royal Jordanian Airlines came on as our main sponsor. And in 1989, we set off with the rest of the fleet. So that was the same fleet as Fisher & Paykel and Steinlager were the two big Kiwi boats, although there were Kiwi sailors on virtually every single boat. And we did very well. I mean, we won two legs. This race takes you around the world. Now there's a lot of stopovers in those days. So the first leg was England to Uruguay. And the second leg, and that took us 5 weeks. I mean, we were on a slightly smaller boat. There were two classes of boats. There were the big maxi boats and the smaller, slightly smaller boats. The second leg was Uruguay into Australia. Now that takes you into the Southern Ocean. And The shortest distance round the world is to go as close to the poles as you can get and skirt round the bottom and then come back up again. So you go as far to the iceberg flow as you dare, go round and then come back up. We won the second leg in the Southern Ocean, and that was the one that everybody was going to be very nervous. I mean, we won it in our class. The maxi class was a different class. And that surprised a few people, but, you know, there's still the thing, oh, it could be luck. And then there was a shorter hop between a race between Australia and New Zealand. And we won that one as well. So then people started to think, oh, good Lord, maybe they are going to be all right. And they, so it gained momentum as we went round. And after New Zealand, you go back into the Southern Ocean. We went back to Uruguay, then Uruguay to North America, and then the little puddle jump home from North America to back into England. It was run from there. It's now run from Europe. So it was a phenomenal race. It took 9 months. It was incredible, actually. And there were 12 girls on that boat. And as I say, we'd been together for a very long time, some of them way longer than when I'd arrived. And there were phenomenal women on that boat. And it was a fantastic experience. And it, yeah, never looked back.
This groundbreaking, epic story of endurance and courage, in which a group of women proved their doubters so very, very wrong, sounds to me like it would make a fantastic film.
Yeah, this year, in fact, I'm going back to England next week for the premiere in England. This year, it's a sort of a movie documentary called Maiden has been released, which follows Tracy Edwards and her story and the boat and the crew of the boat, with old footage, because obviously we went round in the late 80s, and you'd be amazed how things have changed since then. So there's old sailing footage, and it's been incredibly well received. It's been at many film festivals already around the world, and Sony Classic Pictures have bought it. So it's been released around the world, and it will be released in New Zealand soon. It's been released in England, as I say, on the 7th, 8th of March, which does coincide with National Women's Day, I think, on the 8th. But, and yes, it's worth a watch. Even I enjoyed it, and I was there. So yeah, it is. It's quite a moving theme, and it is a very relevant theme. I mean, girls sail this race now all the time, and there are some phenomenal female sailors out there. It was the first professional all-female yacht crew to compete in the Whitbread Round the World race. So there had been isolated females. I mean, as I say, they often went as cooks, and there was some other sort of big-name female yachtsmen of the time that went as single girls on the crew prior to that. The whole race changed in the early 90s. It became a lot more professionally driven, and money was bigger. And then more and more superb female sailors who were professional sailors got carried on and went on and did other, you know, got on boats after that. I wouldn't say that we made that easier for them. I'd like to think we made that a lot easier for them. I think basically people turned around and went, actually, they're all still alive and they can do it, and they did okay. So I think it was something that allowed some of the excuses and some of the biases to be blown out of the water.
Do check out the film's trailer, linked in the show notes, and look out for the film when it makes it to cinemas. It is a chance to see what Claire and the rest of the crew went through as they battled against high seas and prejudice. But how did this experience change her outlook on medicine and the rest of her life?
I think, well, it changed it in many ways. It changed me personally, of which my medical career was a big part of my life, in that I had gone from school to medical school, done certain jobs, thinking that, you know, doctors and, you know, young doctors in the middle 80s were the only ones that worked every hour God sent, and that... and then I suddenly realised that we weren't, and there were other people out there doing jobs that involved incredibly long hours and incredible dedication, and they were amazingly talented at different things. So it broadens you like any travel, like any different thing does. It makes you a lot broader in your appreciation of other human beings. It made me value how a good team can work. I was not the best sailor in the world by several hundred thousand. There were some phenomenal sailors on that boat, but they needed a medic. You need people who can take orders. So what Tracy made up was a champion team. And so the teamwork aspect was, again, something that I really valued. And we couldn't run away from our team. I mean, when you did 4 hours on deck and 4 hours asleep, or tried to sleep. Now, when you were asleep, there were five people on deck that were not only sailing that boat, but they were looking for whales, they were looking for icebergs, they were making sure you got up again. That needs trust. And some, you know, so you have to trust people. And a little bit like I talk about leaders have to make people the best they can be. And a teamwork is about making your team colleagues the best they can be. It may be slightly different from you. Everybody brought a different aspect. There was a rigger on board who kept the rig up. There was, you know, people who would go out onto the bow. There were the helmsmen in the heavy weather. Everybody had a job, and we trusted them to do that. And that carried on through my medical career. It also probably made me look for work that involved teams. It made me realise that I'm not a lone player necessarily. I prefer that interaction with people. And initially, for many, many years, it stopped me getting back into mainstream medicine because I enjoyed sailing, and we got, you know, we got other sailing opportunities, and I did other stuff. So I could dive in and out of medicine.
So Claire's journey thus far now finds her in urgent care. I was interested to hear what benefits working in urgent care brings her.
For me now, I mean, I think there are many benefits for me personally in that, as far as how I want to practice medicine, you never stop learning in any speciality, but in urgent care in particular, I love the generalization of it. You are still a pure generalist. And I think general practitioners would also say that they are generalists as well. And that is very, very true. I think it is more true in a rural setting, or depending on how you run your clinic. I was not as keen on chronic care medicine as I was on urgent care medicine. So for my personal learning, I love the urgent care aspect. It gives me great flexibility, and always has. And my career has been very flexible all the way through. I mean, my one time of stability was when my children were young and I was going to school. But in truth, in my rural GP setting, we were called out to the roadside. You know, we did our encore where we left. So it was, I mean, rural general practice sort of encompasses urgent care as well. But the flexibility is definitely there. I can do evening shifts or I can do day shifts, as long as it works with the unit as a whole. And I really value that. I can also, as I did last year, take several months off to go back to be with this sailing team that we were with many years ago. And I'm not coming back to patients who have waited for me to come to return to work. I just walk in and start working again. And I do like that aspect of it. You can get a great satisfaction from having a relationship with patients and going through that model. But also there is an expectation on both sides from that relationship, and there are times in my life when that wasn't what I wanted to do. Certain parts of general practice, it is wonderful seeing the babies grow up and carrying on with that continuity of care, but it can also become quite draining in a sense. Now, some people absolutely love that and love that going through, and I couldn't take that away from them. And I was in urgent general practice for sort of 14 years, and they were wonderful years. But I loved the fact in rural medicine that I also was running an acute clinic, which was basically a urgent care clinic. I mean, all the doctors did. It wasn't just me. We had these clinics set off, you know, set aside. And they were great because you didn't have some of those consultations when basically you are the drug. And sometimes, you know, your personal ability to be the medicine for that person can run a little bit thin depending on what else is happening. Whereas in urgent care, you deal with who is in front of you, you do the best you can for that person, and then you point them to the next person down the line that is, if it's needed, who is going to take over and or follow them up. Or else that one appointment, that one section, you can complete their treatment and feel satisfied that you've done that best job, and that's what's done. In medicine, in general practice, again, for girls, it doesn't have to be, but you do end up after a while having a certain cohort of patients. So you end up becoming quite specialised in certain things. And that didn't always sit easily with me. So I wanted a broader scope, and I didn't want to be always the one that saw some of the psychosocial issues, especially the female psychosocial issues. It is incredibly important. I hope that I did it well when I was doing it, but I didn't want a week of it. I wanted to be able to do other stuff. And again, when people are booking appointments far in ahead and you're a little bit more limited in your break-off appointments for urgent stuff. I was being booked 2-3 weeks in advance. And so it was harder for me to turn around and say, I suppose, you know, that's not the only thing I want to do. Whereas urgent care does suit me a lot.
So having now found urgent care herself, what type of person does Claire think suits a career in urgent care? And why would she recommend people undertake the fellowship training pathway?
I think people who can adapt to a change, I think people who need a difference in their work. I mean, one minute you can be quite quiet and you're looking something up, and the next minute you're slammed. So I think that the people who flourish in urgent care are quite happy to make use of downtime and to enjoy a degree of pressure. Similar to ED, but in no way the same. I think doctors who wish to maintain a generalist portfolio, that are quite happy to be a master, I won't say a jack of all trades, because in fact some people are incredibly good at a lot of things. I think teamwork is incredibly important in urgent care and will become more so in the future. There is a lot of collegiality, and people who are quite comfortable in going up to somebody and saying, what do you think about this? That is a great, you know, that's one of the great advantages of urgent care, is that teamwork, collaboration, and the ability for you to learn all the time from somebody, and they'll go, actually, you know what we do in ENT now? We do this, because somebody's just come out of that speciality. I think it can offer a great flexibility and hopefully good remuneration. Yeah, I mean, it does allow for travel, it allows for flexible working hours, flexible working times. I think it's great for career for people who are looking at that in whatever stage of life they're in. I mean, you can dip in and out. You don't need a linear career anymore. Nobody else has it in today's society. And I think medicine needs to look that people can get very burnt out from one or dissatisfied with one career and they just need to change and find the love of medicine again and find out why they want to be there. And sometimes that needs a relearning and a change up. And urgent care can offer that. I think it's a phenomenal, as a training section of your life in medicine, I think it's brilliant because you do not know who is walking in the door, and you can be siloed very early in medicine, and then you sort of pop out of that silo in your mid-30s or your 40s and you go, oh good Lord, this is all I've done and now I'm incapable of doing something else. Whereas actually you're not. You're just not as comfortable in doing something else. Whereas a training in urgent care and time in urgent care, you're going to see every single one of those cases. People are going to walk in that you are unfamiliar with. Why urgent care helps is there's probably somebody in your department who is familiar, or the training will make you familiar and make you safe with that presentation and tell you where to go to get that help. So it does make you very broad. And I don't think urgent care sort of keeps you and sucks you in and you have to be there forever. It is a good career forever for many people, but it is also something that you can go into and out of and also do as a very valuable portfolio career. I mean, I think having several days in one speciality and several days in another speciality is going to be something that a generation of doctors will cherish and will really find an advantage from. And it can happen at any time in your career. You don't have to do it early. I didn't. Although in truth, if you look back at what I did, urgent care has sort of formalised what was happening anyway. I mean, in the emergency departments in the 90s in England and in the emergency departments now, there is a huge overlap with urgent care. In general practice, there is a huge overlap in urgent care. In rural general practice, we were the urgent care. And it just bridges all of those things. In urban settings, urgent cares are becoming more either standalone or as part of a general practice because general practice is becoming so chronic care management, and you really do have to make a point of having appointments for, you know, urgent presentations and stuff like that. Or they'll run a walk-in clinic themselves. So medicine's changing and urgent care is coming out as a field that needs to be serviced. So I think wherever you are, it's great.
The urgent care fellowship is relatively new. Had it been available at the start of her career, would Claire have considered it when she was starting out in medicine?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I think if it had been available when I started, I would have done it. The reason I didn't do the emergency medicine fellowships in the 90s in England was you needed to follow a very structured course. And I didn't have the flexibility I needed to do that. Whereas the urgent care fellowship is flexible. You need to be a self-directed learner. You need to be able to do some of the things within a time frame, but I would have managed that a lot better than having to be somewhere at some point every single week. That was very difficult for me. The same with actually my general practice fellowship. I did it through the experiential pathway because I couldn't get to once a week training. So I don't think the college do the experiential pathway anymore. But that I was lucky enough that things sort of slotted in, and that really, really worked for me. But I do. I think it's a great fellowship. I think it is broad. I think it encompasses many, many things, and it hones training. I think it's really hard to know what you want to do in your middle 20s. And the urgent care fellowship allows you to again get better training and sampling in many, many things, and you might then say, right, well actually I would like to do this or I would like to look at doing that. But patients nowadays don't just come to you with one thing. they come to you with many, and we're sort of behoven to be able to tell them where to go in the nicest possible sense, in the saying, right, well, I'm not the best person for this, but you should go there. But I do think urgent care, like general practice, gives you that broad ability to signpost people to the best place. And as an urgent care trainee, those urgent care presentations you can deal with and be confident with. So I think it's very useful. The flexibility, the thinking on your feet. I mean, I think that's where urgent care is gold for that. You know, if you like that sort of mindset, and urgent care takes you wherever you want to be. I mean, if I suddenly somebody phoned me up and said, look, we want you to be the on-call doc for this team, I would have no problem with that. And certainly with urgent care training, you could then turn around to, I mean, institutions these days want some form of fellowships. They want you to not prove who you are, but to have some backup, or they prefer that. Yeah, if you're a fellow in urgent care and there is a team that's going to go somewhere, or you want to feel confident in going somewhere, I think it gives you a great grounding for that. Whatever you want to do, whether it's within sports or whether it's within a personal sport or travelling, you're useful, you know, and you're broadly useful. And that is a very, very useful, that's a great thing to have, is a broad knowledge of stuff. And the ability to give things a go, which is what urgent care does. It does keep you aware of all of that the body as a whole needs to work, and you know all of the systems. It's a little bit, you know, and you left medical school knowing a little bit about everything, and then you slowly got to know an awful lot about a little bit. Urgent care keeps you broader for longer, I think, even if you do specialise later or at the same time. But it does allow you to realise that everything is connected.
During her trip around the world aboard Maiden, Claire and the other 11 women on the boat shattered long-standing assumptions about what was possible and helped change the way female sailors were subsequently viewed. I wondered if she saw analogies to how women in medicine had to challenge biases and presuppositions to establish an equal footing within our profession.
I mean, I do see analogies in that, you know, when you look back at my career as a female in medicine, there were some perceived biases and some real biases. You know, you were initially, you know, I went in at a time when, yes, there were a lot of girls going into medicine, but nowhere near what there are now. When you're doing it, you don't sort of notice it. It's a little bit like the Round the World race. We didn't quite realize what we were doing because we were very sure that we could do it. It's just everybody else was telling us that we couldn't do it. I think certainly what's happened to me since is that flexibility and that belief that you can, and just not being told that you can't, and you need to sort of make it your own in a sense. And I'm not saying that that is easy, and I'm not saying everybody wants to do that, but there are certain differences in medicine now that, you know, orthopedic surgeons had to be sports guys and you had to be strong because you were going to pull this in and wrench that out. And I mean, that's a terrible stereotype, and I do apologize to all the orthopedic surgeons out there, but these days that's changed. I mean, we were just talking earlier about how you put dislocated shoulders back in. I mean, when I was young in ED, it was quite a forceful procedure that put dislocated shoulders back in, and now we are very gentle relocating on. You don't need strength, you just need technique. And I suppose the Whitbread Round the World race, I am never saying that a bunch of 12 girls is going to be as strong as a bunch of 12 guys on a yacht, but what we were able to do was make that yacht work for us. So our hydraulics were slightly different. Our techniques were slightly different. When we did major sail changes, we got everybody on deck. We just didn't rely on the few that were up there. We thought ahead, and if we thought there was going to be a problem, we planned for it, sorted it, and then waited for it. And hopefully we were ready for it. And so we did change sails a little bit earlier. So we might have lost a bit of speed over half an hour, an hour, because we were waiting for that storm to come through. Because we knew that if the storm came through and we hadn't changed our big sails to our small sails, we were going to struggle. And it worked for us really, really well.
So continuing to look at women in medicine, I was interested to see what Claire thinks about urgent care as a career. Does the training and practice of urgent care medicine suit women?
Because the career is a very, very flexible one, and you can work it around everything else. You can work it around being a single female that wants to go out and about and do other stuff. You know, you might be involved in sports or teams, or you might be involved in many things, actually. You can work full-time, you can work part-time. There is no, there's no job, I think, in urgent care where you have to work 40 hours a week with a specified amount of training. It doesn't, that paradigm really doesn't exist in urgent care. I mean, you can if you want to, but you don't have to. And because urgent care centres tend to run shifts, I mean, my particular one is 24 hours, but there are others that are extended hours, then you can work that around whatever else you want to do, be it your family commitments, be it children, be it your partner's commitments, or just the fact that you prefer working in the evenings. So it is a very, very flexible career. And I think the training program is also very flexible. You need to be an independent learner. And I think a lot of female physicians are that. I mean, I think males are as well. But I think out there are a lot of female and male doctors that, especially general practice, that go home. They then will do their results later. They do a lot of extra work, as would hospital workers as well. But I think the independent learning is very good. And it is a very collegial college, where depending on where you work, there is a lot of time where you might discuss patients, and I think that again suits the female collegiality psyche. They will, you know, certainly all of our trainees, we talk a lot. People will come and discuss things, I mean, males and females together, about I might not be the best person to treat this person, what would you do, etc. So I think that non-threatening way of learning works for many of us, actually. So no, I think it's a great career for girls, and it's a great fellowship for girls.
So there we have it. Claire's career path shows the importance flexibility, adaptability, and having an open mind have in finding the life that you want and the job that suits you. It shows how urgent care provides people who want this flexibility, breadth of knowledge and teamwork, with a rewarding and satisfying career. It shows that by putting trust in your own abilities and the team around you, you can not only achieve things beyond your own expectations, but you might even surpass that which the rest of the world thinks possible. And it shows the value of taking the road less travelled. Now I'll leave Claire with the last word.
When you look back, you only ever really regret what you didn't do. So you don't want to sit there thinking, I wonder how that would have taken me. But I think things have changed as well for people now. Unless they hold themselves back, I think there are choices. And I would like to think the established medical format career does allow people to go in and out. I must admit, I don't know. I'm not in that world, but as an employer now, I would like people to bring a much more diverse and broad aspect to their job. And I think that is happening all around the world. I mean, in the 70s, you know, if you hadn't worked for the same company for many, many years, or you'd had a job that you changed every few years, people would go, oh, what's wrong with them? You know, why aren't they holding down a job? I think that's totally different now. I mean, outside medicine, people are interested in people who have done other things and can bring other things into their workforce. And I think medicine should follow that. So no, I think anyone that has opportunities and they think, I wonder if I could do this, the answer is yes, you can.